Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to the In the Truck podcast. Today we've got a special episode. We have Angelique Castaneda on as a guest. Angelique is a trans woman who is a conservative and has gotten some backlash from that, and is a pro-Second Amendment for very compelling reasons. So I was excited to have her on. I came in contact with her on Twitter. She also has a YouTube channel, which I'll post a link to the description to later on, but definitely is worth checking out. Angelique, how are you today?
I'm doing really great. How about yourself?
Very good.
I'm so excited, excited to be here and talk about these very interesting topics.
Definitely. So I was watching, I guess first, so I came in contact with you somehow through Twitter, and I'm not sure exactly, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I found it very intriguing because I think so often seems like with these identity groups, like there's people who sort of join a political team for non-political reasons. And some of them, it doesn't ever make any sense to me. And I thought like your pro-Second Amendment stance makes so much sense. And I thought, well, I wonder why more people don't do that. But I was wondering, and I was watching your YouTube channel, and you were at Berkeley. Do you live in that area?
Yes, I do. I don't live in Berkeley directly, but I live close enough.
Oh my goodness. So what is that like for you? I would think, you know, like Ben Carson or Milo or something like that. It seems like you become you don't have a team at all then.
What do you mean by like team?
Well, I mean, in the sense that, and maybe I'm totally wrong, but my guess would be that as a whole, the trans communities, especially in the Berkeley area, would be pretty left wing.
And then, yes.
And then, people wouldn't be a fan, and then you know, people you may have something in common with also, you'd be like a pariah in a sense.
Right, definitely. Yeah, like many of the trans people I have known in my past, or you know, my friends who are trans, a lot of them don't talk to me because of their politics.
They won't talk to
you. No, they won't talk to me anymore. I've been blocked blocked by many of them on social media just because I have differing opinions from them. Lots of arguments. And so, yeah, it could definitely be hard to find, other trans people who, you know, accompany me. I have one really close trans friend, also very, very close to the amendment. Her name is Erin Smith, she's getting very popular in the conservative community, at least in the Bay Area. So, you know, I have like one person, but it is definitely hard, especially in California, to be able to find, you know, like-minded people who are also trans.
I would imagine that's true. So what is your, go ahead and explain what your take is on the Second Amendment and why it's important.
Yeah, I mean the main reason is that it's in our Constitution. You know, it's our God-given rights when we're born that we have the Constitution to protect ourselves. And specifically for myself, being a trans person, I feel that it's necessary that I have the ability to protect myself against people who would want to cause harm to me. Like already there's been about, I just looked up today, about 8 trans people who have been murdered just for being trans. And so I feel like, you know,
and that's,
we're just, go ahead, sorry.
That's in 2018, correct?
Correct. And we're such a small, you know, 8 may not seem like a lot, like in the grand scheme of things, but when you compare it to how small the trans population is, it's about 0.3% of the population. 8 is a lot, you know? And so
yeah,
if I don't have any way to defend myself, you know, you know, I can really, you know, risk my life just for being trans. And so that's why I think it's so important for trans and LGBT people to really fight for their Second Amendment rights so that they can protect themselves. You know, because if they can't protect themselves, who will?
Well, yeah, and that's sort of what I was alluding to earlier. You know, it seems so strange to me that people thought, right? It seems natural to me that, you know, people in the LGBT community would want to preserve at all costs their right to defend themselves. And then also you think like their right to free speech and a lot of other things where, you know, when I talked to you before, I said I wanted to talk about freedom on here. And that was part of it is, you know, I would think, it seems to me that especially small groups that are somewhat marginalized, regardless of what they are, whether it's a religious group or, you know, a group that has a different sexual orientation, whatever the case may be, would want to preserve as much freedom for everyone as humanly possible to give themselves the space to live the life the way they want to. And it seems so strange to me that so many of those people are in the left and they want to dictate and sort of shrink freedom, and at the same time maybe don't realize, at least it seems to me, don't realize that they're painting themselves into a corner.
Right, right. Yeah, like that's one of the really interesting things that I've noticed is that, you know, especially the First Amendment, it was the First Amendment that allowed, you know, the civil rights movement to happen, that allowed the gay rights movement to happen, where they can actually speak, you know, their viewpoints and actually thrust their movement forward. But then now that they want to, you know, shut down free speech, you know, calling for, you know, hate speech, it's like, how are, you know, future movements like this supposed to ever happen if you don't have the right to your freedom of speech?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get the hate speech thing. Always makes me laugh because that's, you know, it's like Nazi. It's been the whole thing's been broadened to the point that it's just silly. Did you get involved, or did you notice at all Bill C-16 in Canada that Jordan Peterson created all the controversy over?
Yes. I definitely was, you know, keeping tabs on that. And I think one thing that I'd like to note about the, you know, C-16. Is that it sets a really bad precedent for trans people, because if trans people are trying to actually go out and look for jobs, and, you know, you have legislation like that where you can be fined or even jailed for misgendering someone, employers are probably not going to want to take the risk on trans people and hire them, because they're not going to want to have that liability of, you know, accidentally misgendering their employee and then being fined for it.
Sure. And I think also just that, you know, that was, I think Peterson's point was, the minute you start having illegal speech, then that's a problem, because it'd be the first thing, you know, the first illegal speech, but it's not going to be the last illegal speech, right?
Right. Exactly. It's all slippery slope. You know, one thing may not be offensive today, but then tomorrow it might be, and then it just continues and until no one can speak.
So what was the event that you and your friend tried to go to out in Berkeley that you got that gang of communist goons kept you out of the room?
Yes. So the Berkeley International Socialist Organization, they were holding an event, a public event, I'd like to note, which was stated on their posters that were throughout campus. They wanted to discuss gun violence and just the broader topic of you know, gun-related issues because of, you know, the recent Parkland shooting. And so me and my friend Ashton decided that we wanted to, you know, go check it out, you know, hear what they had to say. And so immediately when we walk up the stairs, because they were on the second floor of the building where it was being held, we walk up to the door and there's someone sitting on a chair. He jumps up in front of the door and says, "No, we're not having this today," and would refuse to let us in. So we ended up.
Did you announce that you were going there in advance?
No. It was very spontaneous. Like, my friend literally the same day told me, "Oh, I just saw this poster. Like, let's go to it." So it was not announced. Like, we literally were just completely curious, and then walked up into the building, and they just would not let us in.
So you're famously dangerous. They know who you are already.
Yes.
So their reason for keeping you out was that you're a Nazi.
Yeah, that we're not Nazis, and that we are associated with violent Nazis.
Are you?
Definitely not. In no way.
It's like, yeah. Are you familiar with Gavin McInnes?
I am, yes.
Okay, so yeah, that's Gavin's thing. Is they're always saying that he's a Nazi, or that he's associated with Nazis, or all these different things, and it's, you know, it's just like outrageous. But that's like the hate speech thing. They've taken it so far, everything's hate speech. Everyone's a Nazi, and it's kind of starts to lose its shine after a while.
Especially for me, like being trans and Latina, because I'm half Mexican, half Puerto Rican. It's like I would have never imagined in my life that I would have ever been associated with Nazis or have ever been called a Nazi. Like, it's still so mind blowing. Like, I still can't like understand like how I would have ever thought.
That makes the whole thing even better. And I don't mean to be, you know, sort of, I go back to Milo, you know, the fact that Milo is a homosexual man who was married to a gay or married to a black man. And he makes him like untouchable. Like, they don't know what to do with him, so they have to call him a Nazi. But I didn't even realize that you were a Latina. And that makes it even better.
What was that? Yeah.
What can I say? You're all their protected groups, and then you don't agree with them.
Exactly. I actually just uploaded a video today talking about how virtue signaling works, specifically when it comes to conservatives, because I feel like You know, these leftist groups, they try to say, you know, oh, well, you know, me as a black person, you know, a black person or Latina person who has been so oppressed, I don't have the voice to speak. So, you know, my voice trumps your voice. And it's like, okay, well, I'm trans and Latina, but I'm also conservative. So therefore, if you shut down my speech, in your logic, you're being very oppressive. So I kind of just talked about how minority conservatives can use their tactics against them to get their points through.
Yeah, I think it really gives them fits.
Yeah.
I know there's a spokeswoman for the NRA is a young African-American woman. And I think that the left has trouble with her because they don't know what to do with her because they want to call her a Nazi or a white supremacist and they can't.
Exactly.
Although Ed Lattimore, who's he's an African-American boxer, he's a physicist, he writes books, he has motivational speaking type stuff. He was recently called a white supremacist because he didn't agree with somebody. And he's not political. He's not the least bit political. He mostly just talks about people, you know, applying themselves and doing better in their life for themselves. That has nothing to do with politics. But somebody was making some sort of communist argument. And he's like, no, don't do that. You got to go out there and work hard and hustle. And their response was that he must be a white supremacist. I thought it was hysterical.
That's the insane thing. It's like literally just advocating for personal responsibility is now, you know, the same as like white supremacy or being a Nazi. Like it's the Overton window of like politics. Like it's just gotten horrendous. Like I don't like I. It's so hard to really keep up these days with just how crazy our politics are going. But
I former episode on the podcast where I talked about the idea of white privilege, and I'm a white male that grew up in suburban. My grandfather left eighth grade because he's the oldest and his father was having a hard time feeding all his brothers and sisters. And he would go out in the morning, 5 a.m, go hunting, try to get like a squirrel or a bird or something to help feed his siblings. And then he would go sell newspapers and he'd look for metal to recycle and all these different things. That was his life. And my point was like, okay, well, maybe I'm benefiting from like, you know, my father's a nuclear physicist, he's retired, whatever. And I grew up in a nice place that was safe and had a nice education and had a lot of opportunities because of it. And maybe you can't start where I started, and that's fair, but you can start probably better than my grandfather did. So your grandkids are going to be better off than me, you know? So that was like my point was like, well, you can't just look at somebody who's had generations of people making sacrifices and whatever, and then say, oh, I want that. Like, well, okay, you got to start somewhere and you can't necessarily, we're not all going to be Bill Gates's kids, you know?
Right, exactly. And I think people like these people who are talking about this like white privilege, like most of them themselves are extremely privileged. Like so many of these people talking about white privilege, they tend to be leftist white people who grow up in, you know, very suburban areas with like super nice homes and just getting everything handed to them, not working, going to all these protests and trying to act like they're oppressed. So it's just
there's a lot of it to me seems like they're just mad at their dad,
right?
a lot of the left-wing socialist stuff, and they really, if you really listen long enough, like, wait, you're mad at your dad.
Yeah.
Like, you're rejecting dad's politics and dad's everything, and you're gonna, I don't know, it seems strange to me. But
yeah, no, I agree.
I feel like here's the thing I think is strange. So I'm a Christian, right? So, and I know there's Christians out there that are very close-minded about alternative sexualities, alternative lifestyles. And I personally don't necessarily get that. But what I think is strange is I think that somehow I think that's a minority of Christians. So I think there's a minority Christian view that's somehow like taken over. And then the same way, like a minority Republican view, maybe. It seems to me like anyone who's advocating for liberty, which would, in most cases at this point, is completely on the right, is a natural ally with trans people, LGBT, African-Americans, immigrants, because they need that freedom in order to live the life they want to live, but also to succeed economically and all these different things. And it's so strange to me that I think the media has played a big role in sort of pushing those maybe natural allies apart. Like, I don't know that I get where, you know, a factory worker in Michigan, a union factory worker in Michigan, and a New York teamster, and a black person in Arkansas, and homosexuals in San Francisco all have the same political views. Unless the political view was, hey, we want to be free to do what we want. And that, right. And like, to me, that makes sense. But I don't get where it's like, wait, we all want the same socialist utopia. Like, what?
No, right. Yeah, like that's first starting off like with the whole like Christian thing is that like or like you know religious people is that even though like you know there's like a small minority of religious people who may not agree you know with my lifestyle, even the ones that don't agree with it, specifically in the conservative movement, I've even found that although they don't agree with it, they're still they still like they're not they don't treat me as bad as like the left does because of my politics. Which is insane, which is definitely insane. But yeah,
Well,
no.
no, I think it's not insane because I think that on the right, if you're not, I don't guess everyone on the right, but if you're a person on the right who favors liberty, then the idea would be like, okay, well, I don't want to do what you're doing, and maybe I don't think it's great, or maybe I see some negative in it, but it's not my business, right? Like, it's your business to do what you want to do.
Right.
It makes sense that on the right you're like, well, whatever, like, so for me, like, I was against gay marriage, not because I actually cared one iota if homosexuals got married. I was afraid that activist homosexuals would try to use that to go to the Supreme Court and force like St. Patrick's Cathedral to marry them or Southern Baptist churches, and then it would just mess up marriage for everybody. And I thought that there's got to be some other solution where everyone has equal civil rights, which I'm in favor of, but that because some of these activists that go after bakeries and farms and stuff like that,
Right.
like, I don't want them going after churches and the future generations of Jews and Christians and Hindus can't get married in their religious buildings because of it. So I was like, well, there's got to be another solution. But I think in general, like, if you talk to people on the right, even people who are maybe in church or very traditional, and you say like, hey, what do you think of gay marriage? Like, eh, whatever, I don't care.
I totally agree with that, and that's why like I have I actually feel so much more comfortable with conservatives, you know, when it comes to me being trans, because you're right, they don't care. But when it comes to leftists, it's just like you have it's all a competition of identity politics. You know, the more identities you have, you know, the more you're looked up at as some sort of god within the leftist community. It's all a race to the bottom, you know?
Right. Well, that's like the victim game, like
Yeah.
the who's the biggest victim? Who can check more victim boxes?
The Oppression Olympics.
I have no, yeah, right. I don't get any. I have none. I'm 6'6". I weigh 230 pounds. I'm white. I grew up in a nice neighborhood. I'm married to a woman. I have kids that go to church. I got no boxes.
It's pretty insane. But yeah, no, it's very disheartening, like with a lot of the politics that are going on in California when it comes to like the trans community. Especially when I was in high school, they had passed a bill. It was the AB 1266 back in 2014, and it was basically stating that that if you're trans, if you identify as transgender, you have the rights in public California, in public K-12 California schools, to use whichever bathroom you'd like, to participate on any sports team you'd like, and to use the locker rooms of your choice. And the writing in this legislation was very broad, so there were no parameters as to whether you had to have some sort of medical document proving that you are in the process of transition, whether you've had to have surgeries or etc. It was literally just if you identify as a female but you were born a man, you can use the female locker room, which I think is it goes against, you know, the fact that 99.9% of the people in that school are not trans, and you're just making everyone else uncomfortable when that trans person could literally just go into the school bathroom to change.
Right, like the school my kids go to they decided without a complaint. So there was no victim. Nobody felt like they were having to force to use the wrong bathroom. They had this big thing where they decided to come up with a comprehensive trans bathroom policy. And I thought it was so fascinating that there. I know for a fact there have been trans students at the school, like let's say in the last decade, and it hadn't been a problem. Whatever solution people had arrived at privately satisfied everyone, and there had been no mistreatment or complaint or problem. And then why didn't you sit down and come up with a policy? And you hear these bathroom policies. I think it's so silly because, like, for me, I go to Target, right? If I'm walking out of the men's room at Target and there's a woman walking in the woman's bathroom, I mean, I don't think twice about it. What's the big deal? I'm
Right,
not going to
yeah.
stop and were you born a woman? Like, what difference does it make? And my kids go in there with my wife and same thing. And I think, well, if you're walking around and could even pass as a slightly as a woman, no one's going to say anything. Now, if I go to walk in the women's room, somebody's like, hey, what are you doing? But I think it's just silly. And then as soon as you have a policy of like a school where you say that, what's, you know, I was a smart ass when I was in high school, a teenager. What's stopping a smart ass like me from like, hey, I feel like a woman today. I'm going to the girls' room, the locker room, you know?
Exactly. And when I was in high school, there were many instances where I would go into the bathroom and there were people literally having sex in the bathroom. You know, I would hear stories, you know, all the time where kids were going into various areas of, you know, of the school, to have sex. So, and so I'm in a Bay Area, so it's very degenerate out here, as most people know. So the laws like these are a way for students like that to take advantage of it.
I'm glad my kids don't go to that
school. Definitely will never have my, if I ever have kids, definitely not going to any. I'm moving out of California as soon as I can. But I feel like prior to there being a trans movement, or, you know, I know like the Time magazine in 2014, they had Laverne Cox on it saying that, it's the tipping point for the new civil rights movement of the trans community. Life was great before all of this shenanigans with the whole trans movement. Like trans people could live freely. Like you were saying, you know, there was no issue. If you looked like a female or you looked like a man and you went into the bathroom that you identified with, no one was saying anything. Because, you know, we didn't know.
You wouldn't have to look that much. It wouldn't. I don't think that the bar is that high. Like, there are plenty of biological women who are not feminine. And there's plenty of biological men who aren't that masculine. You know, the spectrum is pretty broad that you could fit into.
Right, exactly. And so I feel like once there was such a big push for like the whole trans movement and all these bills and laws getting into place, I feel like that's when everything started messing up. Like now I feel like, you know, because I'm trans, like I feel like there's so much more like pressure onto me, you know, being a trans person, where I don't get to live my life, you know, in secret. You know, like I feel like it's now something where, you know, everyone knows about it. Everyone's trying to push this bill and that bill, and you know, bring, you know, in California, they just passed a bill where there's now you could have a non-binary as your gender, and I feel like it's just literally making a mockery out of the trans community, because now they're saying that, okay, well, gender is a social construct, but if you say gender is a social construct, it literally means that you're an act, so therefore trans people don't exist, or why would you transition if it's just an act? So it's all these trans activists and Democrats that are pushing these, you know, laws, you know, it's trying to say that, you know, it's good for trans people. It's actually doing the opposite. It's only making a mockery out of us. It's only causing more people to dislike us and push back, because it's going against their freedoms, you know, their comfort, you know, being able to be comfortable.
Right. I think once the, gay marriage was legal, you know, all over the country, I think that a lot of those activist groups that had been built up over the years and had an infrastructure and had donor lists and were collecting money and had employees, you know, that movement went on for nearly 30 years, and 30 years it grew and grew and grew. There's probably, you know, chairmen of board of directors of some of these activist groups that are making six-figure salaries, and nobody wants to give it up, so they needed something new. And it really felt like, to me, the trans thing came out of nowhere, sort of getting pushed because they were looking for some new thing, which they didn't have one. And then, like you said, with the non-binary and a lot of this stuff, it seems like they don't really even represent real people. They're not even talking about individuals or real people or somebody had a problem, you know, with the bathroom. There was no case. It's no big national case of a trans woman being denied entrance into a bathroom, or, you know, there was no sort of civil rights violation to jump on. They just made up this kind of fake scenario, it seemed like.
Exactly. That's definitely like what I've noticed. And again, it's all just causing more harm. And I feel like that's probably their whole intention, because if they can get, you know, a huge population to start going against, you know, the trans community, now it's like, oh well, you guys see there's so much pushback, there's so much bigotry coming to the trans community, we must continue to fight. So it's like they're causing up more drama so that they can continue pushing their agendas and keep making their six-figure salaries.
Whereas I feel like there's a real, and this kind of goes back to your Second Amendment stance, like there's a real actual issue that's really affecting trans people, and they're being killed, you know, seems like much higher, disproportionately high numbers. So 8 this year, you know, like you said, maybe it doesn't sound like that much. It's less than Chicago, it's less whatever, but there's such a small group of people to begin with. It's a, it's kind of astounding. And there's, I don't know, I think that that's a real issue that probably should be addressed. And it seems like you're trying to do that and talking about it and in your YouTube channel. And there's probably other people as well, but it seems like that's getting sort of brushed under the rug while we fight over bathrooms, which is, you know, no one's dying over that.
Exactly. And that's especially why, like, after this whole Parkland shooting happened and you know, there's been such a push for for gun control. It was really this event that really sparked my vocal support for the Second Amendment, just because I feel like a lot of people have become complacent, specifically conservatives, which is why, you know, California is what it is today. There's so many conservatives who kind of become complacent, where they're not really, you know, pushing for what they believe in. Like in California, there's so much gun control going on, and there's like a new bill going on where they're trying to add background checks to gun parts now, so you can't even like purchase those without a background check. But I realized that so many people become complacent until something like Parkland happens, and then there's a huge push for gun control. And I think that kind of sort of happened to me, where it's just like, oh my God, like this gun, you know, the Second Amendment is really at threat now. Like now it's time to really fight for the Second Amendment, because if we don't, then it's going to keep going downhill from there. So, I mean, I guess it could be both like a good thing and a bad thing, like the whole being complacent, but then having, you know, people coming after your Second Amendment and then that causing you to actually go out and fight. But yeah, you know, I'm at this point, I'm trying to do, you know, whatever I can to vocally speak out against people who are trying to you know, take my Second Amendments away. And there are groups who are LGBT groups that are also pro Second Amendment, like the Pink Pistols group, which is a coalition of LGBT people who you know, train and teach people how to shoot guns. And there's another one called Project Blazing Sword, which is a collection of volunteer gun enthusiasts, NRA certified gun trainers who teach LGBT people you know, gun safety, basics of guns, how to shoot for free. So, I mean, it's great that there are these services out there and that there are groups that most people wouldn't expect that actually do support the Second Amendment.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And I think it's interesting because my position for 20 years has been the left's goal is confiscation, you know, complete, you know, banning any Second Amendment, complete confiscation. And everyone laughs at me and tells me I'm crazy and they can't do that. I'm like, they just take baby steps, you know, every couple of years take a baby step and maybe it pushes back. But they have this long-term goal and it doesn't matter how long it takes. And when they had the shooting in Connecticut, in the school in Connecticut, Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, where I live, came out and flat out said on the radio, confiscation is an option. And we need to do something about guns in New York State where the shooting didn't happen, and that confiscation was an option. Now, in that case, it was a kid was crazy, and he stole a gun from his mother and killed her and then went to the school. And, you know, so all the background checks in the world, it doesn't get to matter, you know, unless on the background check is like, do you have a child who eventually is going to become a homicidal maniac? I don't know how you do that, but... So, but yeah, Cuomo came out right away and said, you know, confiscation's an option. And they came up with some other ridiculous thing that's a big joke. They banned a bunch of cosmetic features of guns. That was silly. I think California has that too. You can't have a pistol grip on a rifle or something like that. And so you have like this whole new gun market now, New York legal AR-15s and California legal AR-15s. It's just silliness. But yeah, they came out and said confiscation's an option. And then this time with Parkland, you had a lot more people come out and say confiscation's an option. And I don't know if you've seen it on Twitter, but like there's all these people who are saying like gun owners should be killed and gun owners should be hanged and all these different things. It's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. You know,
or the opposite is not true.
Right. Yeah. No, I've seen that so much. And there's so many of these gun control activists who are trying to say, oh, well, we're not trying to, you know, take your guns away. We just want to, you know, ban the AR-15 or we want to ban assault rifles. Like, well, first, like, can we define what assault rifle is? And then, you know, it's like you look at the March for, you know, the whole March for Our Lives event. And one of the students literally said on, you know, during the, during her, when she was speaking, when they give us an inch, the bump stock, we're going to take a mile. It's like, they're vocally saying that we want to take all your guns away, even though so many people are trying to say that, no, they just want to, you know, increase, you know, background checks and this and that and that. It's just like, no, you know, sure, there are some who probably just want to add, you know, some little things here and there, but there's a lot who literally just want to eradicate the Second Amendment entirely.
Well, I think most Americans, you know, from every walk of life, really just want to go to work and spend time with their families and pay their bills and have a little fun and don't want to get necessarily involved in even thinking about these things or being activists or anything like that. So when you get something like gun control and you go, they'll pull it. They'll say like, oh, are you in favor of common sense gun control to help save lives? Everybody's like, yeah, sure. That sounds good. There's no details in that, like how you're going to do that or what it is or what effect would have or any study of like, oh, this thing, we reduce this thing, we'd reduce this many deaths or anything even like that. And I think that you know, that's what you see some of these marches. People go because they're like, oh, we don't want kids to die. And maybe only 10% of the people there want to confiscate firearms, but the rest of them are all there lending their voice to that person. And I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, it's not a group, gun control isn't necessarily an issue that everyone has a like mind about what that looks like. But in the end, the most fervent are going to be the ones that get to the front. And the most fervent are going to be the ones who are trying to pass legislation. And I think that's where the real threat comes from.
Right. Yeah. No, it's definitely always like that. It's always like that. That small vocal minority is always the one that gets pushed to the top, and they're the ones who get all the media and you know, when you know your everyday Americans see that, they're just like, okay, well, maybe we do have to introduce a law to ban this thing and that thing, and it definitely does set a bad precedent that you have the vocal minority who's getting all the attention, but then no opposing views are getting anything.
Right. Well, you know what they didn't count on though with all this?
What?
They didn't count on a trans activist from California and rural New York Christian podcasters getting together and getting along.
That is true. And that's the wonderful thing about being, two sane individuals who can come together and have a conversation and not, right. Yell at each other and say that you're a Nazi and this person's this and that. It's just, we need to be able to have conversations and understand each other's viewpoints. And so we can actually go somewhere from that instead of just yelling at each other and bickering.
Well, yeah. And I think you have to, I don't know, the thing I ask myself about somebody else and they're, talking to somebody is, does what you want change my life in any way, shape, or form? Or is what you're trying to do going to hurt me or my family or my children? And if the answer is no, why should anyone care? So I want to grow a giant potato garden in my side yard and my wife is very opposed to it. But regardless of which one of us wins that argument, it doesn't affect anybody. Right. So no one else should have an opinion anyway, shape or form on it. And I think most of the things that we do in life, most of the things we believe in life are the same way. You know, if you and I have different religious beliefs, that doesn't really matter. What difference does it make? Your religious beliefs aren't trying to hurt me. Mine aren't trying to hurt you. We can just disagree. It's fine. And I don't understand. And I think that's why I think you're seeing more and more people realizing it's okay to kind of come out on the right, because like I said before, I think on the right, not everyone, obviously, there's some Republicans who are kind of not really into liberty, but in general, it seems like regular people on the right are more into liberty and people being free to do as they please and, achieve whatever limits they want to achieve to, and not holding people back or not stuffing people in a box that they have to stay in and can't get out of.
Right. Yeah, exactly. for example, if I were to go to UC Berkeley right now, and if I were to walk into the the Young Democrats club, they'd probably tell me to leave because of my views. But when I walk into the Berkeley College Republicans, they're always like, hey, Angeli, thanks for coming, and they're such great people. These are people who they don't care. They don't care, as long as it's not affecting them, who cares? Just come, let's have a conversation, let's be friends,
Sure.
The left doesn't know what to do.
Well, those poor Berkeley College Republicans, they've been to war a couple times already. Those poor people, goodness gracious.
Yes, and I've seen it all unfold.
Have you?
Yeah, I'm very close with many of the Berkeley College Republican administration people and just the regular club members.
I did a podcast about how funny it is the Antifa doesn't even understand that at this point they've become a meme, and that conservatives or people on the right who want to get attention, they just schedule a talk at Berkeley, and then you get days and days and days of media coverage when Antifa shows up and has a rock. Like Ann Coulter sold 1 million books. She didn't even have to go to Berkeley. She just said
exactly.
She just said she was coming, sat on her couch at home, watched the riot unfold, and sold 1 million books. There you go. Thanks.
Exactly. Yes. Same with Milo. They literally, their whole point was to shut him down because he was dangerous and they didn't want to hear people, they didn't want people to hear him speak. But again, yet they caused this riot, and it basically caused, national news, and now he's like this huge, you know, this huge like, you know, internet celebrity who's, you know, selling books and coming out with new books and starting little organizations and stuff. It's like they're
well, the funniest thing about Milo to me is that if you really pay attention to Milo, you'd realize he only has about a half an hour of material. He's not, you know, the shtick only goes so far. If they just left him alone, nobody would have paid attention after a while. I think he's hysterically funny. And when every time he gets a new, you know, feminist or whatever the case may be, really mad, I find it interesting. It's funny to watch. But you realize it's the same thing over and over again, like saying lesbians don't exist and that women belong in the kitchen and what all the stuff he said. It's the same over and over and over. And just people just continue to get mad about it.
It's wonderful to see unfold.
If they left him to his own devices, he would have faded into obscurity a long time ago.
Very true, very true.
But yeah, I definitely enjoy that. And I think it's interesting, you know, for Milo, how much of that is really him and how much of that is a character, I have no idea. But it's interesting to see him sort of create this public persona that's in the era of identity politics is unassaultable. You can't say there was something that came out with the whole Nazi thing, which I guess, you know, it was the beginning of the broadening of the term to include people like Milo. But there's nothing, you know, if you say you believe in identity politics, and it's like you said, you're a Latina trans woman, like what are they going to say? What can they say to you? And then you saw it at Berkeley, they called you a Nazi and said you can't come to their gun control meeting.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like for me, like I'm not necessarily a fan. Well, I'm not a fan of identity politics. Like the only reason why I'll be like, oh, me as a trans Latina, like when I bring it up, I just use it in spite of people who use identity politics. It's like, if you're going to use it, I'm going to use it against you. But, you know, I personally believe that, you know, it shouldn't be about the fact that I'm Latina or that I'm trans. It should just literally just be about my ideas. Like that's all that matters. But in our politics today, you almost have to bring up your identities to be able to actually get your point across. Or they'll just call you a white supremacist and a Nazi and won't hear you out.
No, yeah, I think on the left, that's true. I think that's the only way, you know, somebody like yourself is going to be able to get a word in edgewise. And you see a lot of people get dismissed altogether. And the media, they have these hiring quotas and things like that. And it has nothing to do with, you know, some of the people who are there obviously are very talented and work very hard, but some of them haven't. And I think it's unfortunate. And like you said, at the end of the day, you're a human being with an opinion. And that should be the first, you know, you think about like, okay, this person has an opinion. Okay, that's a human being with an opinion. It doesn't really matter what country you're from, what religion you are, what your sexual orientation is, what your gender is, or anything else. Like, just should stop and listen to a person with an opinion. I heard this thing a while ago. I forget who it was, but I want to say it was like, it wasn't Oscar Wilde. It was some philosopher, writer type guy. And he said that when he goes to parties, he never asks people what they do for a living because he would be afraid that knowing what they did for a living would change his opinion on what they were saying. So if you met someone at a party in a tuxedo and they were a plumber and they had an opinion about politics, it's easy to dismiss them. Like, oh, it's just a plumber. You know, or if you found out somebody was a college professor, maybe you'd give too much credence to their opinion because you think that you have a sort of a preconceived notion of who that person is or what they would know or how much esteem that holds. I think that's an interesting idea. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a plumber or if you're black or if you're white or if you're Latina or if you're Asian, like none of that matters. Like, you're a human being, you have thoughts, like you share your thoughts. People should listen and say, okay, well, I don't agree because of this, or I do agree because of that, whatever the case may be. And none of the rest of that stuff, it seems like it should matter at all.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It's actually a really, really interesting way that, like, way of it being put it, like, it, like, you know, like, I'm not going to ask like what you are, who you are, because I don't want that to affect my thoughts and what you have to say. Actually, I like that.
Yeah. And I think we have a lot, and obviously the plumber example is interesting. Like, we have a lot of prejudices about professions, you know, like what that means about your education level or what you can't have an opinion about, or you can't have an opinion about it. Like, if you went to a university and you said like, hey, I'm a farmer from Nebraska and I want to talk to the people in the gender studies department about something to do with what they were saying, they'd be like, oh, you can't, you know, you're not qualified to be here. You know, they kind of shoo you away, where, you know, maybe that person's studied their whole life what they're talking about and they know more about it than you do, but you want to dismiss them because of their, who they are for a living.
Right. Yeah. No, I know someone who was complaining to me the other day about the fact that she doesn't think it's acceptable for Ben Shapiro to talk about Islam because, well, he's not a Muslim, so what does he know? But it's like, well, he's done, you know, quite some heavy studying on Islam, and so I mean, it shouldn't take being trans to be able to talk about, you know, transgenderism. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's yeah. it really just closes off discussion, because then it's like, okay, so only trans people can talk about like trans stuff. Like, how are we going to get, you know, how are we supposed to push, you know, if you're trying to push some sort of agenda like transgenderism, how are you going to be able to push that onto, you know, you're right, you know, your typical non-trans people, when like they didn't even get to have an opinion on it. They didn't even get to, you know, say how they felt.
Well, I think I agree, you know, and especially to the point where if what we're discussing doesn't, like, so if you're talking about a trans issue that doesn't affect me in any way, shape, or form, then maybe I should just be quiet and leave it alone. That's nothing to do with me. But if now we're talking about a law that affects everyone, like, okay, well, now I can have an opinion, because now we're not talking about trans issue. We're talking about all of us, you know? And I think with Islam and, you know, Ben Shapiro and myself, because I talk about it too, I read their book. I read their holy book, which is more than 90% of the Muslims in the world have done. So am I less of an expert than someone who's never read it? Which is, you know, you're talking about, right? Like, the people in Yemen are illiterate. They haven't read it. So is a Yemeni immigrant who's illiterate a better representation of what Islam is, or am I, because I read the Quran? Well, maybe I am. I don't know. Maybe I'm not. But I think I have a right to have an opinion about it. I read the book and say, hey, this is what it says in the book. And I think that's Ben Shapiro's thing too. Like, you watch what was going on in the world, you read the book, you read the writings, you listen to some speeches by some clerics, and you're like, okay, well, I have an opinion about this.
Exactly. And also, exactly.
And for him specifically, it affects his community in a big way, because a lot of the countries near Israel want to destroy Israel. So, like, well, now he has a stake in it, and he should have an opinion about it.
Exactly. No, you're absolutely right. It's like, if you take the time to actually, you know, do some studying, do some research, like, just because you're not that doesn't mean you should, like, you know, be barred from talking about it. It's like, well, I did some research. I can have an opinion.
Yeah, and I think especially if you have an open mind about it. If you're not saying, like, I'm the only authority on this topic. Like, so if I had an opinion about trans issues, and you said, like, hey, you got this wrong here, and this is why, and whatever. Like, you got to be open minded enough to go, oh, okay, maybe I got it wrong. But I think that as long as you're willing to listen as well, there's nothing, anybody can have an opinion about anything.
Right. Yep.
So listen, I think we're going to wrap it up there. I really, really enjoyed having you on. I hope that you're willing to come back again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed this this conversation a lot, and let me know anytime. I'm down to come back on.
Oh, great. And I will put a link to your YouTube channel in the description, so people can go to that, and I'll reference it. I'll put it up on Twitter that the episode's up, and I'll put it in there so people can see that. So I think, look, are you newly on YouTube and Twitter?
I've been making videos for like 6 months, but I privately load my videos, but generally, like, within these last 2 months, I've been regularly active.
Yeah, so more people need to know who you are, because you got a lot of interesting things to say and an interesting perspective. So hopefully this will be the beginning of that.
We'll see.
All right, listen, I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. And for everybody out there listening, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the In the Truck podcast.
Bye-bye.